welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Joe Biden's White House continues to insist it has little leverage over the Israeli government to bring a halt to the fighting in Gaza or Lebanon. This is obviously an absurd claim. At the same time, it appears the U.S. is resigned to a wider conflict that includes Lebanon and beyond. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. Also in New York, we have Stanley Cohen. He is a human rights lawyer. And in Rome, we cross to Romano Ribeiro. She is an author and managing editor of the Palestine Chronicle. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Stanley, if I can go to you first in New York, I'm really getting very, very sick and tired of these claims that the White House has no leverage over Israel. You know, we're supposed to resign ourselves to a genocide that we can all watch in real time. I find that pathetic, and I find it criminally liable. But also, we have a U.S. officialdom that have Israeli citizenship, by the way, going to Lebanon and saying, well, if the Israelis go to war with Hezbollah, we'll be on the side of the Israelis. Why was he there? Where was the diplomacy? Why do we have to resign ourselves to just more bloodshed and a wider war when one telephone call from the White House could change all of that? Go ahead, Stanley.
Well, it's called the election. It's called AIPAC. It's called the ADL. It's called, at this point, Biden could care less about morality, principle, international law, about war crimes. He wants to win. He's waited long enough, and he's made a decision that it's more important to court AIPAC and it's more important to court the Zionist wing of the Democratic Party and the Independent Party than he is concerned about losing the young women and men who are in the streets, who are rightly so, saying genocide, genocide, genocide. And you're absolutely correct. With one phone call, this ends, because under the Arms Export Control Act, which Israel has been clearly in violation of for generations now, he picks up a phone, he says, that's the end of it, you're not in compliance with the act. Congress could end it as well, because they are the only person who could weigh in on the Arms Export Control Act. The judiciary has said it's a separation of powers issue. So Biden, as he's done for his entire career, has made a political calculus. How do I get more votes, and what do I have to worry about? In this case, the slaughter of Bowman yesterday of the electoral, the AIPAC ownership really frames it. That Biden wants to win. He knows he can't shut down Israel. For a while, he tried to walk a tightrope where for every dollar he gave in humanitarian aid, he'd give 10 to kill people and to destroy communities. So this is all about the election, as it is with Netanyahu, who fares three trials that are waiting for him to put him in prison.
Well, you know, since Bowman has already been mentioned, I was going to do that in the second half of the program, but I'll throw it to Lionel right now. Lionel, you were on the program quite a bit, and we went through the farce called Russiagate, you know, where Russian meddling in the American elections. You know, Stanley just brought up the most glaring meddling in American elections, all out in the open here. I mean, every cent that was spent, I mean, this is, you know, a foreign government, Israel, through its conduits in the United States and its satellites there in the U.S., determining outcomes politically. I mean, this is just outright meddling, but no one will call it that. Lionel.
Well, aside from that, you know, what's really interesting is that, and I have been doing a radio talk radio for 35 years, and the word AIPAC or Israel lobby was third rail kryptonite. It was like the N word. This was the A word, and yet yesterday, coverage saying AIPAC backed Bowman loses, and they own it. It's like there was this transition. Now, I don't know if that's deliberate, if people have finally awakened, but you're absolutely correct. How can anybody claim that external, extrajudicial, extragovernmental influence on our sovereignty is okay? And very finally, how does anybody seek to secure the position of power with their voters by saying, I can't do anything about this? What, is there a gun to your head? You don't understand. I can't control where your money goes. Oh, by the way, vote for me.
Yeah, what? But Romana, this, it, the America's democracy is at stake. That's what everybody says here, but they missed the point here. I mean, it seems that both major parties, they will curry favor with donors, not with voters, certainly not with what's right, okay? It's all about money and how much you can get to run your elections here. That is probably the most pathetic soft power message America is sending the world right now. Go ahead, in Rome.
Yes, I think among the various things that Gaza is exposing to the world, there is this concept of liberal democracy as a whole. And we see that this is a structural crisis. It's not a contingent crisis for sure, meaning that if these lobbies are so powerful that they can actually be a superior interest than people in the streets shouting, for sure we don't have a represented democracy, but we have at best an oligarchy and not a democracy. But I think that yes, what can seem completely irrational here, it is irrational, but up to a certain point. Yes, for sure, the United States is treating Israel as an internal front, not as a foreign policy issue. And it is doing so also because it has ulterior motives. For the United States, it is essential, especially following the pivot to Asia, and so the fact that they actually left the Middle East, it is essential for them that Israel maintains its deterrence, that Israel maintains its military superiority over the region. I think that the United States wanted Israel to win and wanted Israel to win fast. It is not in their interests, of course, that the conflict expands, but they cannot afford to leave Israel, not restore the deterrence.
Yeah, but Ramona, the problem with maintaining or recapturing deterrence for Israel is that it might cause the Third World War. That is certainly not in the interest of anybody, including the United States. Now that AIPAC has been brought up, Stanley, can you explain something to me that I've never really understood? We hear all of this investigations about how much AIPAC gets involved in elections, who they have bought. They have minders in Congress. Israelis, Americans, we're all the same. We're interchangeable. Israelis use the American flag at will. Why are they spending so much money and so much effort and so much intimidation on something that should be obvious that we're the same? But apparently we're not, because they have to keep pressuring people to convince everyone that we're all the same. I don't share those values. I don't believe in genocide. I believe in bringing people to account. I mean, it's counterintuitive. I mean, you wouldn't need AIPAC if we really actually shared these values. Stanley.
Well, you know, the Foreign Intelligence, the Registration Act, FARA, which was designed years ago to force megaphones for foreign governments to register, to put the country on notice that I am working for Israel, I am working for country X, I am working for country Y, which has rigid rules in terms of what you can do, how and why, was passed or should have been passed with Israel in its mind. We know that FARA has been applied when it comes to lobbyists and folks that have supported Russia over the years. We know that FARA has been applied when it comes to people that they charge with offenses for speaking or working on behalf of Iran. But when it comes to Israel, it comes ultimately down to, you know, Truman said in 48, when he initially was opposed to, quote unquote, the establishment of the state of Israel, Truman said eventually, I'm not interested, I don't think it's a good idea. But after discussions, he made some comments which remain true today. Palestinians don't have money and they don't vote. The Jews of America have money and they do vote. Look at Allison's wife, the late Allison, who gave hundreds of millions of dollars to Israel forever, has been sitting on the fence because she supported opponents initially against Trump. In the last few days, she said, I'm giving you $100 million.
Yep.
Do what you want with it. Just make sure Israel has no headaches, has no problems, and can commit as much genocide as possible. So you have this duplicity where, on the one hand, you have laws, you have acts, you have procedures, you have limits that in theory are passed to level the playing field, to try to keep foreign governments outside of controlling domestic policies and politics in the United States. You have the Arms Export Control Act, you have the Lowry Act, you have all these laws that have been passed to maintain in theory the democratic integrity and ideal of the United States. which when it comes to Israel, politicians blink. It comes to Israel, they ignore it.
Yeah,
it comes
but
to
Stanley,
because of
APAC
money.
Yeah, but Stanley, if I could throw this to Lionel, Stanley just said, you know, here's all the money, make sure Israel doesn't have any headaches. But it actually creates a huge headache for the United States and its standing in the world, and far worse than a headache for the people of Gaza. Lionel.
You know, that's a great point. And I was going to say something before I forget. Have you noticed, and of course we have to thank God for digital streaming platforms and alternate citizen and civilian and alternative news, which basically they have transformed the subject matter. But now people are starting to pay attention as to what's being said, because all I tell my friends is pay attention. Recently, there was a statement by, I believe, an Israeli official, whose name escapes me, who said something like, you know, you really can't stop Hamas. You really can't. It's like an idea. And I thought, whoa, 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 wait a minute, hold it. That was the million-dollar statement, because the argument is that we need this money in order to stop this. We will not stop until they are crushed. If you have somebody who just eliminates that as a possibility, that defeats the entire theory. Yet, it's now percolating through, and it's permeating, it's breaking the blood-brain barrier. And in these debates, people are saying, this is a lot like terrorism, isn't it? This is like when we were going after people around the world because they embodied some kind of ideology, and they really weren't actually a corporeal threat. And people are getting it. And that's why somebody at some point, they've got about 130-something days until the election, they've got to stall the American electorate, because people are figuring out right now the narrative doesn't make any sense. And
yeah,
by the way,
yeah,
but
people, Ukraine completely. But people do face consequences if you don't go along with the narrative. You know, long before this happened, we had academics all across the Western world have lost their positions because they were contrarian. And now it's the kiss of death. I mean, you have to get in line. Liberalism is really, really damaging. Folks, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, let's go back to our guest in Rome. Ramona, one of the things I find very disturbing, while all of us are watching the events unfold in real time on the Lebanese border, on the West Bank, and in Gaza, the way I'm watching mainstream media, they're kind of normalizing genocide. It's like, well, this is what's going on again in Gaza. And of course, you know, using the passive voice and all that, they're just normalizing. That's part of our everyday experience here. The reason why I bring it up, because it enrages people like us even more, because, you know, we point out that this is don't you understand what genocide actually is? We see these pictures here, and you're not going to do anything about it. That is one of the most alienating experiences and feelings I've ever had in my life. Go ahead, in Rome.
Yes, absolutely. And this is from a media point of view and from a political point of view. Let's think what happened with Rafah and all the Rafah operation. We had U.S. officials going every single day on television saying, no, we don't want Israel to carry out a major operation in Rafah. Israel doesn't have to cross the red line. Then we saw literally babies burned alive in the tents in Al-Marazi. We saw decapitated babies, and we saw Miller going on television and saying, yes, true, it is very sad, it is very disturbing, we are inquiring, but we do not think Israel crossed the red line. We would like to ask them, what was this red line? But this has happened, you know, so many times with Israel and the United States. Let's think of what happened with all the ceasefire discussions. On May 31st, Biden says openly, oh, Israel presented a ceasefire proposal. And then Israel said after a few hours, oh, this is a surprise for us. And the United States was negotiating as if it was a part and not an honest peace broker, as we are used to here. So literally, we are used to this. I think the words hypocrisy and double standards literally are not enough to describe what is happening now, even in terms of how they present the genocide. Absolutely.
You know, Stanley, there's I think it was in Haaretz, there was a letter signed by prominent Israeli officials asking the U.S. Congress to disinvite Benjamin Netanyahu to speak to a joint session. Netanyahu's policies may be popular among Israeli citizens, but he isn't, okay? And they point out, and these people are, most of them are pretty hardliners too. We have to make sure that's clear. But, you know, this is not the message they think Israel should be sending. He's not the right messenger for the world right now to make Israel's case. Though all people in Washington are talking about is how many standing ovations this man is going to get. This is surreal, Stanley.
Everyone gets to use his appearance to their own ends. It's a political gesture, it's a political presence, it's a political gift. He will get up there, he will speak. On one hand, he will thank those political leaders, those political players, those entities that are supporting Israel's right to exist in peace and safety while they murder 100,000 people and civilians, largely women and children. And on the other hand, he will then say, and here's this man, Biden, who keeps threatening us. And he keeps telling us he's going to roll back the weapons. He's going to impose the AIPAC sanctions. It's the biggest political show in town. He will serve the purpose of Joe Biden. The whole time that Biden will turn around and say, I disagree, and he shouldn't be involving himself. The whole time that Biden says, I'm reining them in, they're not. They're continuing to pour money into it. You know, it's interesting with the reference to genocide. People have argued for years that genocide is built upon how many lives have been lost. Well, this genocide statute has nothing to do with the amount of damage,
yes,
but intent. What, yes, is the intent of someone?
Yes.
So for years, Israel and Israeli supporters said, there's more Palestinians than ever. Show us the bodies. And now that you've got the bodies, they turn around and say there's a proportionality test. Well, there is no proportionality test. And whatever happened on October 7th has absolutely nothing to do with the results of genocide that are plain to see. But the ICC and the ICJ, which are quick to go after anyone else that doesn't have the political power that Israel does, blinks and says, well, please stop. Or maybe we'll get to a warrant issue. Or maybe we'll move to intervene. And Biden turns around and he makes a speech. It'll be interesting tonight for him to praise the American effort, his effort to try to rein in and to end the genocide while he's writing a check daily, which keeps it going. The red line has become a period of dots. Yep. It doesn't matter what you want to call it when you've got every day thousands of women and children and civilians that are displaced, that are targeted, that are assassinated, that are murdered. Biden can say all day long, I'm opposed to this. Meanwhile, he's winking, he's fueling the system. And here comes, as you started out this particular segment, and here comes Netanyahu to get standing ovations. For what? For American dollars to slaughter women, to slaughter children, to displace millions, to destroy, and as you pointed out, to create enormous harm for the American body politic when it comes to the vision of the world, because we see what's going on in the Middle East, we see what's going on elsewhere, and while everyone is apparently focused on, oh, who's meeting with whom, where, and when, the bombing continues, yes, the funding, right, continues, the indifference continues, and it's all at this point, how do I get more votes? And that's what you're going to see tonight.
Yeah, but Lionel, I can't see how Biden wins at all. He's painted himself into such a corner. I think you saw the image when he was at a fundraiser with Barack Obama, and Barack Obama had to lead him,
yes,
off the stage. I was wondering if that's a metaphor. It's time for you to go, Joe. You've served your purpose. Go ahead, Lionel.
And Barack Obama, by the way, who was verbally and theoretically manhandled by Mr. Netanyahu during his visit. But let me explain another aspect, too, which is so interesting. You know, Peter and I, you and I have talked about how I am siding passionately with people who, before,
yeah,
I guess, October, I despised.
Yep.
They were anathema to me. Now, here's something very interesting. Free speech and expression is under attack all over the world. Very, very briefly, we had this thing on January 6th where people decided to riot in Washington. Okay, fine. And they were charged with seditious conspiracy and rebellion and insurrection because they all conspired to interrupt a governmental process. And they were put under the jail in these star chambers. Okay, fine. When Mr. Netanyahu arrives, you're going to see protests as well. Many of them manned by and led by people who are called the left. The left, who didn't care about January 6th, who didn't care about it because it applied to Donald Trump. Now they're going to be reaching out to their brothers across the aisle and say, wait a minute, you know something about this. Is this seditious conspiracy? No, this is a corruption and a collapse of free speech all over the world, where you have to pledge fealty to ideology. And if you were to ever interrupt this thought, you are crushed criminally. There is nothing, I've never seen anything as blatant as this in my life, either as a lawyer or a commentator as an American.
Yeah, but Romano, it's really, I think we've talked about this before, but the Zionism as an ideology is corrupting all of the West with all of these acts that we're seeing right now. And, you know, there are people like Joe Biden, you know, it's difficult to know what he knows these days, but, you know, when he says, I am a Zionist, I wonder what he thinks when he says that, okay? Because it has a certain meaning to me, and it's about inequality, bigotry, et cetera, et cetera. But for him, it's just Israel, and that's really damaging. Go ahead, in Rome.
We have to be clear. Joe Biden has always said, you don't have to be a Jewish to be a Zionist, and I am a Zionist. This is a line that he likes very much. He has repeated that line so many times over the last decades, we can say, since he was very young. And you are absolutely right. Zionism is permeating every aspect. I live in Europe. I live in Italy. Here, there are, for example, three Italian-Palestinian kids. I say kids because they're very young, in their early 20s, and they were detained because they were supposedly sharing resistance propaganda material. Nobody is talking about that, but this is basically, they are doing so in the name of the Israeli embassy in Italy. Not to speak about Germany. Today, the news was that Germany will have an Israel loyalty test to grant the citizenship, the German citizenship to a people. We are really, you know, crossing every possible line. Of course, like, as I said before, liberal democracy was a myth that had already been dismantled. I'm speaking from Rome now, and actually I cannot access Russia today. I cannot access RT. There has been a widespread censorship over the last months and years. Yes, there is Zionism as a concept, as the superiority in a sense of the West, and they don't want to let it go.
Yeah, Stanley, you know, questioning Israel, the way things are going now, we'll probably see a war against Hezbollah in Lebanon, which nobody knows how that can turn out. It could be a huge regional war the United States has already pledged. What kind of country says in advance, you know, we're going to back these guys, okay? But we're here to moderate. It's just so absurd here. We're looking at a regional war, and it would be very serious if it happens. Stanley.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When you a few moments ago, you referred to Biden saying he's a Zionist and a proud Zionist, but he's for justice. It reminds me of decades ago when Biden said he was a civil rights activist, when he touted legislation that ended up sending millions of people of color to prison for nonviolent offenses. So there's this double standard pursuit between do not as I do, but just follow what I say. To get back to your question about Hezbollah at this point, the world is generating support that's not been seen before, and it's appropriate and necessary. So let me see if I understand this. Hezbollah has elected as a community in the community. We're not talking about 7,000 miles away. We're talking about a place, Lebanon, that has been invaded on multiple occasions. We're talking about the home of Sabra Shatila. We're talking about the occupation by Israel. We're talking about their use of phosphorus weapons and cluster bombs in violation of international law. We're talking about Israeli torture chambers in the south of Lebanon. We're talking about Israel, which is bombing Syria, which is bombing Lebanon. So let me see if I understand this, Mr. Biden. You in the United States are funding genocide on the ground in Palestine. You in the United States are every day supporting Israeli attacks on Syria, on Lebanon, and elsewhere. And for those countries on the ground in the region forget about for the moment the position of the Houthis, the principal position saying we're not going to be silent neighbors. So the neighbors who are seeing
I'm afraid I have to jump in here. We've run out of time. We have to hit a hard break here. I want to thank my guests in New York and in Rome. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.